All right, let's hit the field.
All right.
Just wanted to talk, that's all.
We're 21 games into the 2024 season. Juan Soto has been terrific. The Yankees are in first place. Anthony Volpe got off to a great start. But Aaron Judge continues to struggle. Should Yankees fans be worried? Talking tonight with Max Goodman, beat reporter for the Yankees, and we will get into all of the ins and outs with the team through the first 3 weeks of the season. This is NYY Recaps.
Welcome to Yankee Stadium.
Just when they thought I was out,
they pull me back in.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, and welcome back to Max Goodman, who has been with the Yankees for many of their first 21 games. Had today off, probably needed it after a trip to Canada and Cleveland. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, we had the ceremony for John Sterling today. What is your favorite John Sterling home run call of all time?
Man, we were just talking about this right before we went live, and I had a couple seconds to think about it. I'm going to go with Yanhervis Solarte. Never nervous. Ooh. Yanhervis.
And oh, I love it.
Solarte. Yeah, I love that one. Couple other classics, but you know, I did an article for the morning after it was announced that he was retiring, and a bunch of other sites had done like their top 10 Sterling calls. I took it a step further. I did top 36 for his 36 years that he was in the booth. So it was nice to go down memory lane. You know, I'm from New York City. I listened to John with my dad growing up, and we'd mute the TV at the very last second to get his, you know, the Yankees win at the end. So that was always special. And he, like Susan Wallman was saying throughout the last couple of weeks, there will never be anybody like him again.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, the fan is in good hands with whoever's going to take his spot moving forward, and we'll see. But yeah, no one will ever replicate what kind of individual he was.
I remember the first the Yankees win. It was not even planned. It was just kind of like, I believe it was the 96 playoffs. Might have been the Orioles, might have been the Rangers. I don't think it was the World Series, but it was just kind of like an impromptu thing. And I remember on SportsCenter in the morning, they would play clips from John Sterling because he was so iconic. I mean, it's 30 years ago almost. And wow, I mean, I'm really going to miss him. I think my favorite all time is the Bamtino. I just thought that was, I just got a kick out of that. And then Burn Baby Burn obviously was great. But honorable mention, the Grandy Man Can.
Yeah, that one was in the, whoever cut up that tribute video that they played on the Jumbotron today, but also posted on Twitter, magnificently done, because it had a bunch of those in there and really, you know, took you down memory lane, like I said earlier. I mean, he was there for everything, right? All of those dynasty years. The fact that he was there for every single pitch of Derek Jeter's career is mind-blowing, right? And it puts it into perspective that was only a fraction of his career in the booth. And you know, he did other sports and such before going to the Yankees too. So, man, just Iron Man, icon, whatever you want to call him. He's one of the greats.
Yeah, I tried to put it in perspective this week. So I do a recap after pretty much every game. I haven't done every game for every season since I started. I usually miss one or two of the West Coast games. And just doing a 25-minute show, like, it's pretty difficult to do that every single night. I can't imagine doing 3 hours. And then he would also do a post-game show for many, many years where he would go through and play his calls and kind of describe. And it's just mind-boggling how hard this guy had to work. But yeah, I wanted to just give a hats off to John Sterling before we got too far into this. But the chat is filling up, so let's talk a little bit about one of his other home run calls that we haven't gotten to hear very much this year. That is All Rise. So I'm seeing a lot more vitriol in the comments about Aaron Judge than I've ever seen. And I mean, it's getting bad. People are really down on him. I don't know if it's the combination of the frustration built over from last year, and we were expecting this, you know, great 2 and 3 in the lineup, and he really has struggled out of the gate. But people are losing their minds over this slow start. Another miserable day today, 0-for-4, 4 strikeouts on his bobblehead day. Got booed on his bobblehead day. So I just wanted to kind of get your perspective, since you're around the team and around the ballpark a lot. You know, what would you say to Yankees fans who are worried about Judge? And specifically right now, do you think that there's something physically affecting him, or is it just a slump?
Well, first off, whoever you talk to within the organization, they're telling us that there's nothing to be worried about. I mean, even Aaron Boone today saying, you know, it's Aaron Judge. It's only a matter of time. We're not worried in the slightest. And yes, it is really early, right? I mean, we haven't even been through a month of the season. There are other superstars that have been pretty cold with other teams. It happens to the best of them. But it is a bit of a red flag knowing that he did miss a little bit of time with the abdomen injury during spring training. You wonder if that's connected to an oblique or something else that he's had in the past. You know, he admitted to us during spring training that the toe is still going to be something that needs to be, you know, kept an eye on. That was the injury from last year, that there needs to be maintenance done on that throughout his career moving forward. But yeah, you see those numbers right there. What stands out most to me is that he's not mashing the fastball. And, you know, I wrote a couple numbers down. He hit over 320 in each of the last two seasons with a slugging percentage in the 700s against the fastball. This year so far, he's hitting 200 with a 350 slugging percentage. And just because I was on that road trip, you know, he did have the walk-off against Toronto, right? But before that, he was 0 for 12 in that series with 7 strikeouts. And I think back to an at-bat, I believe it was in that game against Kevin Gausman, a pitcher that he has a lot of familiarity with, has great numbers against, and had just seen him, you know, two starts prior at Yankee Stadium. And it was 2-0 in the count. And he fouled a pitch back that was basically right down the middle, a fastball in a hitter's count. And, you know, the camera panned to him and he was just shaking his head. And that's something that Judge has been saying recently, that he's just missing the pitches that you're normally used to seeing him drive out of the ballpark, or at least drive to all fields. And the very next pitch, he broke his bat and he grounded into a double play. And it's just kind of spiraling for him. He's not taking advantage of mistakes. And yes, he is up there in walks. And there are some metrics that you can still be encouraged about. And obviously the track record is there. But it's just very uncharacteristic, I'd say. And when you look at other parts of the lineup not producing as well, it's eerily similar to what we saw last year from this team, except Soto is now Judge. Because last year, Judge was the great hitter. And the rest of the lineup was failing in a lot of big moments.
Yeah, I just want to see them both hot at the same time for a little while. That will be fun to watch. But, you know, I just wanted to throw this out there for the Yankees fans who I know some people kind of watch casually, or they pick up certain games during the season. There's been a ton of players throughout history that have gotten off to really bad starts and still had really good seasons. Just a couple of Yankees examples. Mark Teixeira, 2009. In April, he hit 200 with 3 home runs and ended up leading the league in home runs and RBIs. And then when Tino Martinez first came to the Yankees, he stunk until about mid-May, and then he turned it on. So that might have been a different scenario, but guys get off to slow starts all the time and can turn around. A couple years ago, Bregman went 1-for-32 to start the season. You remember that? And then he hit 308. I looked it up. So, you know, 3 weeks into the season, I'm not, like, hitting the panic button. I feel like, honestly, it would have probably been better for him to start the season on the IL and get a proper spring training, though. Thoughts on that?
Well, what you know, in spring training, he was saying, all I need is 30 at-bats to get going, and I can get all those at-bats in the cage or on the backfields when you guys aren't watching. But something else that he said today is that he's had worse starts in his career, and I went and fact-checked that, and he's never had a start anywhere near this, unless you count 2016, which obviously wasn't at the beginning of a season, and it was his first taste of big league action. So at that point, the strikeouts were way higher. But even then, he was hitting 174 with a 580 OPS in his first 21 games or two, whatever it would be through now. And right now he's hitting 179. And you know, you're just not seeing him do what he normally does. This is Aaron Judge we're talking about. He had a bobblehead tonight because he hit 62 home runs in a season. He's a MVP not too long ago. So yes, there are other players around the league that maybe still haven't hit a home run, or they're hitting around 200. It's just, you consider all of the factors and it is a red flag. Like I said, you're a little concerned because maybe he isn't 100% and he's not going to tell us that. He's clearly dealing with a couple of different things, and maybe it's just a timing issue as well, because that was your initial question here. Yeah. Did he need a little more time against live pitching? And maybe that's what is holding him back, because now he's chasing out of the zone when he normally takes those pitches. Or like I said earlier, he's missing that mistake pitch right down the middle that normally he hits 450 feet.
Right. Well, one guy who has been, you know, living up to what we expected even more, I think, is Juan Soto. He's been unbelievable. Every at bat is super entertaining. Just watching the war on television is amazing. You've gotten to see a lot of it up close. You know, what's been your impression of being around Juan Soto for, you know, the first part of the season, seeing him as a professional and, you know, the reactions of the other baseball people who presumably see a lot of other players and, you know, how they're reacting to Juan Soto?
Right. I mean, I think we talked about this, you know, shortly after he was acquired, but also in spring training. I mean, we're all baseball fans, right? And we all knew about the greatness of Soto, and we've watched him on TV, or maybe when he's played against the Yankees, I've had a chance to watch him in person. But to see day to day just the generational talent that he is, and you see some of the numbers there, the numbers with runners in scoring position, it's like a cheat code. And every single at bat when he goes up there, and I'll say plate appearance, right? Because he works walks like nobody's business. It's a war. Like you said, it's a spectacle. It's appointment viewing. You know, if we're in the press box and I want to go grab a snack from the back room or I have to go to the restroom, I'll make sure that Soto's not going to be up, because that's a plate appearance that you don't want to miss. And again, the numbers are just unprecedented. They're ridiculous. And if he keeps this up, he's going to win an MVP this year. I mean, that's how good he's been. And you talk about taking advantage of mistake pitches, that the home run he hit the other night to cap off that inning against the Rays and lead to the victory. And that, I think, brings me to my next point, because you check the third base camera looking into the dugout, and everyone on the Yankees is really enjoying this too. And Soto will refer to that group as a family. And it seems like he's really enjoying his time here so far, which obviously is a good thing for those that want to keep him around. And I think that's the vast majority of the fan base in the organization. But with every special moment, that price tag is going to continue to rise. And I think that, you know, Hal Steinbrenner must be watching and recognizing the fact that he's got to figure out how to keep Soto in pinstripes, but also thinking, how much am I going to actually have to spend? Because other teams are seeing this too. And Soto is just, he's one of the greats. And not just this year and not just this generation, he's one of the best of all time in terms of what he's been able to accomplish to this point in his career and when he's at his peak. So if he keeps this up, like I said, it's going to be a special year for him.
If Hal Steinbrenner has to sell one of his private jets to get it done, then that's what he's going to have to do. We can't let this guy go. Just kind of spitballing, what do you think of numbers for him? I mean, is he going to get $50 million, $60 million a year? I mean, Shohei obviously brings with him the deferments, which lowers the value present day, and he pitches. So, you know, 700 is probably off the table, but I saw that Fangraphs projected 15 years, $701 million for Juan Soto, which would be nuts. If you had to kind of just guess, what would be like your starting point?
Oh, man. Well, it was, what, 440 from the Nationals?
That he said no.
Ago and he said no, and there are some other teams out there that could probably offer even more than what the Yankees would consider. You know, I think he's going to break the all-time record now and go above Ohtani range? Probably not, I guess, because like you said, he doesn't pitch. Also, maybe 600 though. I mean, if he continues like this, not to mention the fact that he plays in 162 games a year, it's not like he has injury concerns. And the guy's what, 25, 24?
He's younger than Adley Rutschman.
Yeah. I mean, there are prospects coming up, and this is sixth or seventh season. So you could argue that he's only scratching the surface of his greatness. And if he has 12, 15 years at Yankee Stadium, who knows what kind of numbers he's going to put up too. So yeah, if it's 550, if it's 600, I think Yankees fans need to prepare to start spending more on their chicken buckets at the stadium. Yeah. You want to keep Soto around.
Yeah, I agree. I would pay a little bit more for those chicken buckets for the hot dog. I mean, they're already, it's like $20 for a hot dog or whatever. But all right, so another guy who got off to a very good start, slumping a little bit right now, is Anthony Volpe. One for his last 18, if my math is right. But he seems like a much more confident player. He's being aggressive on the bases. He's looked good in the field. You know, the swing path is obviously different. I've heard a few veteran baseball personalities like on MLB Network and so forth say that, you know, this guy's an emerging superstar. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do. Yeah. You know, I thought he was going to take a step forward this year and probably a big step, but I didn't imagine this kind of start. And again, it is early. We'll see what he's able to accomplish over the next couple of months. And I think the biggest test for Anthony is, how is he going to adjust when opposing pitching staffs start to, you know, try to get ahead of him, and they adjust to the adjustments that Volpe's already made, because it's a different swing. He has that confidence, like you said. I go back to the at bat that he had against Emmanuel Clase in Cleveland, where the cutter from Clase is just about as unhittable of a pitch in all of baseball, especially in a high leverage spot. Volpe had never seen that pitcher before. He'd never faced him. And he said to us after the game that he was like scrambling to find, you know, some scouting reports from guys in the dugout. And he goes up there and he saves the game. And he, you know, they ended up losing, obviously, in extras. But the he goes the other way with that pitch, doesn't try to do too much. And 100.4 mile an hour cutter cutting away from him to the outside corner. And he takes it all the way to the gap in right center. And, you know, you're seeing some of the defensive highlights there, too. He's one of the best shortstops defensively in the game. Obviously, he won a gold glove last year. And without overstating this, I think you're starting to see if he can continue to put this together and continue developing, right? Because he's only 22. He could end up being one of the best well-rounded players on the field on any given night. And yeah, you know, the changes to his swing, it hasn't zapped too much of his power. And the metrics across the board are just spectacular, which shows you that he can continue to develop. He's the quintessential leadoff guy because he's stealing bases. He's getting on. He's slapping the ball to all fields. He's not swinging and missing as much as he did last year. So everything that we saw in his rookie year that was a little bit of a disappointment, I'll say, obviously it was a good rookie year, but he'll be the first one to say that it wasn't as good as it could have been. He's gone out and he's fixed those things, or he's improved and developed to start to make those adjustments, and you're seeing it in his numbers.
Yeah, I'm seeing a guy who's just supremely confident compared to last year, a guy who looked like he was feeling his way through. You know, maybe if he was down in the you count 0-2 or 1-2, you kind of got the feeling like, you know, the battle was already lost, but now it seems like he's battling back in a lot of those at bats. He'll get two strikes, but he'll also work a full count, and you're seeing him turn around more walks. So, you know, all the numbers are up, not just the batting average, the on base percentage, all that stuff. So I think if we just get him on base more, he's going to just increase his value because he's going to keep stealing bases. He's going to score a lot of runs, you know, being in front of Judge and Soto, you know, as if Judge ever hits. But I'm loving what I'm seeing from Volpe so far. But that brings me, you know, we got to kind of go back and forth between the positive and the negative here. His keystone combo mate, Gleyber Torres. I would love to put up some fancy highlights for him, but, you know, through 77 at bats, he doesn't have any. He's hitting 195 with no home runs, just two RBIs. We've seen him have longer slumps in his career. You know, there was that one year where he hit 9 home runs, and, you know, 2020 wasn't good to him. He was out of shape, but I'm confident he'll turn it around just because I've seen him for a long time. I know he's a good hitter, but I'm not as confident that he'll turn it around and not like spiral out of control as I am with somebody like Aaron Judge, who, you know, is just a MVP caliber player. So, you know, is he basically at risk of losing some playing time with some of the guys we got coming back, DJ and Birdie and so forth?
Yeah, it's been an unfortunate start for him because last year, if you don't count Judge because of how much time he missed, Gleyber was the best and most consistent hitter in pinstripes over the course of the whole year. And he took a lot of those concerns from 2021 and 2022, where he didn't have any power and didn't look like the phenom that was, you know, a freshman and a sophomore before then. And a lot of those concerns are back. You know, he isn't chasing if you look at the metrics, and he's worked his walks in there too, seeing a ton of pitches. And that was one of the good things from when he was in the leadoff spot before Volpe switched in. But like you said, I mean, the highlights aren't there. The metrics are even more discouraging than a lot of the numbers that he already has. And it's a contract year. I mean, you're starting to see the struggles and the offers. And I think he's maybe even taking it with him, not just to the next at bats, but also to the field.
To the field.
When we talk with him after the game, you know, he'll say to us that he's encouraged. He thinks he's seeing the ball well, but he doesn't sound like the normal Gleyber Torres, who can be a spunky player. He can have that personality in the clubhouse, and he just seems down. At least that's been my impression being around him on some of those really, you know, bad days where he doesn't contribute even when his team wins. There have been a couple plays where I don't think it was explicitly his fault in the field. Like there was that one where he threw it to third in Toronto and the guy slid around Oswaldo's tag. He was probably being mindful of the obstruction rule. I thought that was a heads up play. You could have gotten safe out at first. It just didn't work out. But yeah, you know, analytically, he hasn't been the best second baseman out there. I think that the concerns over the base running mishaps and the defense have kind of gone away in recent years too. Maybe they're starting to come back. But like you said, and I'll close with the playing time situation. If DJ LeMahieu's coming back, and I think John Birdie isn't too far from a rehab assignment too, you're not going to take Oswaldo out unless he continues to get colder and colder, because he has cooled down just a little bit. But he's been one of the best Yankees in terms of driving runs in, stepping up in the big moments. You can only push Glaber so far down in the lineup if he continues to be this much of a black hole in there. Then again, he's making too much money to have him on the bench. He can't right. be a bench player. So you may start to see DJ come back. You ease him in, have him play a couple days a week at third, a couple at second, and you ease off a little bit with Glaber. He got the day off today. But then you start to talk about the quality of the bench. And if you're bringing Jamai Jones in there to get a start, you're not going to get that kind of production. So it's not the best situation right now. And I think that the Yankees do have faith that Glaber will turn it around. You talk to Boone and he'll give you the same answer that he does with Judge, that he's not worried in the slightest. But there aren't as many things to hold on to and think, okay, now he's starting to figure it out. It's just not in there right now.
Right. And, you know, it being a contract year and, you know, the Yankees having some young infielders like Peraza, and now Yorbit Vivas is presumably healing. You know, I could see Gleyber Torres being someone they trade at the deadline if they want to get some more pitching, because right now the bullpen has been a little bit shaky. Caleb Ferguson really struggling. I mean, he couldn't get my grandma out right now. I mean, every time he comes in there, I just sweat because I know it's coming. You know, Loaisiga out for the season. You know, we don't know what we're going to get from Efros or Canely when they come back. Efros hasn't pitched in a long time. Canely has been kind of injury prone the last couple of years. So I'm looking at potential bullpen pieces. You know, Birdie out right now. What are your thoughts on the pitching situation as we approach, you know, the first month of the season closing out? We're starting to look a little thin.
Sure. I mean, Ferguson was supposed to be the Wandy Peralta, right? And, you know, Victor Gonzalez hasn't, off the top of my head, even worked as much. It doesn't seem like he's been put right. in those leverage spots. So maybe they don't trust him as much there. I think that the hierarchy once Loaisiga went down was Holmes in the back, and Holmes has been great, but you talk about nail biters. I mean, he's worked himself in and out of trouble quite a bit, which means he's kind of due for spiraling out of control and blowing a game or two at certain points. Then after that, it was Hamilton, and Hamilton had a bad night for the first time in a while. Maybe other teams start to catch on to that Slombio and his really good and unique stuff. But the jury's still out on that because he's been really great before then. And then it was Ferguson and Nick Birdie, maybe. But like you said, Birdie's out for a while. Gonzalez hasn't pitched in those spots. So it's no wonder they go to Ferguson today, and he ended up, you know, taking the loss. He has quite a few losses to start the year. I don't know if Glaber would be the kind of person that would get you a bullpen arm, just because that's what you said. He certainly hasn't increased his value so True. Far this season. But yeah, I can totally envision this summer Brian Cashman telling us, you know, at the deadline, we had a couple internal acquisitions in Efros coming back and Lou Trevino coming back. But the loss of Michael King, the loss of Wandy Peralta, and now the loss of Jonathan Loaisiga, you couldn't necessarily expect him to last a full season, but they just don't have that dynamic. He's going to get you through this jam, other than Ian Hamilton, and especially a multi-inning arm. I could totally see them putting Luis Gil out there once Gerrit Cole is back. Yeah. And I think that that'll happen before, you know, later in the summer and when the deadline comes around, because Gil could maybe be that Loaisiga, just in terms of you can't find too many guys with more electric stuff. And if you shrink his workload, it may become even better and even more high octane coming out of the pen. But if Nestor doesn't necessarily continue to pitch well, maybe he would be a guy that you could put out there in a long man role. The bullpen overall hasn't been getting the job done so far, as much as maybe some of the numbers are better than what the eye test would say. And also, I think some of my colleagues on the beat have written about the fact that the swing and miss isn't there in the bullpen. The strikeout rate isn't what we're used to. They do Right. bring the best out of a lot of those scrap heap under the radar type arms. But when you're relying on basically your whole bullpen as that, and then Clay Holmes, it can be a recipe for disaster. So we'll see if they can settle in. You also need more length from your starting pitching.
Yeah, that's important. We got to talk about the starting pitching because they're not getting deep enough into games, man. I do think that Stroman looks, you know, we're seeing highlights from Stroman. I think he's lived up to the hype so far. He's done a nice job. Nice little pickup. I think Clark Schmidt is good when he's in there. But again, he has turned into a pumpkin in the sixth inning for 2 years now. Take a look
Absolutely.
At the stats.
Yeah, you go into the sixth inning or into the third time through, and Clark really hasn't taken that next step. What I will say with him is that his strikeout rate is up a bunch. He's not giving up as much home runs. The stuff is totally there, and he has the potential to take just a really significant step forward as now, you know, getting into more of a veteran MLB pitcher. You know, I think he debuted in 2020. Like, it's been a while for him. Obviously, this is only year two in the rotation, but he's got to prove that he can pitch through the third time and into the sixth inning. You can't, I know in today's day and age, not every starter is going to go that deep into games, but if he continues to only go five or even less than that on an off night, that's going to really hurt the bullpen in the long run. And we saw last year, the bullpen was so good, but at the very end, they started to fall off. And I think that was a result of just the workload that they had throughout the whole year. And I'll mention Stroman really, really quick too. I think that he's been a great fit, wearing the retro t-shirts and the turtleneck. Seems like he really loves being here. And I think we got that vibe even all the way back to his introductory press conference over Zoom when he, you know, talked about how he squashed the beef with Brian Cashman and this was where he grew up. It's a homecoming for him. He's been great. I think he can be a 1B once Cole comes back, if he continues, and that sinker is a money pitch for him working off the rest of his stuff. I think that he'll be good in big games down the stretch. That's how he strikes me as someone that they can rely on.
Before the season, we talked a little bit about Rodon and how important it was for him to, you know, step up this year. I think he's done a lot better this year, but again, I feel like he should be getting deeper into games too with his stuff. You know, I don't know what it is. He just doesn't get swings and misses. He gets a lot of foul balls on that high fastball. Does he need another pitch, or is it just that he needs to refine one of his existing pitches to get more swings and misses?
Hey, I mean, he's been working that cutter this year and the changeup too. Off the top of my head, I believe in his last start, he had a pretty balanced mix after the fastball and the slider in terms of he's not only a two-pitch pitcher. I think you could start to see his third and fourth pitch a little more as time goes by. But yeah, you know, he's had an encouraging start to the year, right? If the velocity was down, if he was just getting shelled early in games, we would go back to what happened last year and we would be talking about how much of a bust he is and how bad that contract is. We haven't been having those conversations so far. He has really, you know, deflected a lot of those that criticism from last year. And in part, you got to give him credit, right? He showed up to spring training and looked a lot better, slimmed down, gotten a better frame of mind. And he's been doing a pretty solid job so far filling in at the top. But, you know, all of them can go deeper into games. All of them can get better in terms of putting hitters away. And that was the case with Rodon in his last start. I think there were a couple, you know, 20, 30 pitch innings. Same with Heel too, right? I mean, Heel, the command is an issue. The control is an issue. He's walking a lot of guys, but the strikeouts are there. So any of these five can go out there and throw 6-7 innings on a good night, but they can also not put guys away against a mid to mediocre team and put the bullpen in a tough spot. That's why before the season, I think I mentioned to you, rotation has a really high ceiling, but also a pretty low floor. And that was at that point, including Gerrit Cole in there. And we obviously haven't seen him yet.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things do improve when we get Gerrit Cole back. Luis Heel, you know, I'm impressed by his swing and miss ability. I mean, that fastball is legit. That's an ace fastball. I think his slider is really good. I think his changeup's really good. If we can just, he's like almost in a race against time. You know, we see a lot of guys who come up with great arms, and it isn't until they have a couple of arm injuries or they get deep into their career that they learn how to command their stuff. But by then, the fastball maybe isn't 100 anymore. Maybe the stuff just isn't as swing and miss. So he's in a race to harness that elite level stuff, before he hurts himself or, you know, again, or, you know, gets too far into his career where the stuff starts to diminish. So, you know, I'm hopeful for him, but yeah, need to get that command going a little bit better. Anything you want to promote before we let you go? Any articles or anything people should read?
No, I've got a couple things in the works, but they're not out there yet. Had a blast on the trip to Cleveland and Toronto, and I've got Milwaukee in a couple of days, but you know, hey, a rubber game tomorrow, you got to take advantage of that opportunity to win another series and take some momentum into the series against the A's, which I think the narrative around this team with their hot start, you know, leading the division, one of the better records in the league, if they don't blow the A's out of the Bronx and some of the you know, depth pieces on offense and the stars too, if they don't start to perform, I mean, this could either be a launching pad for the offense for them to really take it and go into the month of May and start to hit better. Or if, you know, JP Sears shuts them down or whoever else Oakland has, that's going to make these conversations that we're having, the analysis, even more damning, because that's a team that you need to go and win at least three, especially in your home ballpark.
Yeah. I think just to come back full circle, if Aaron Judge doesn't go off against the A's, that might be when I start to like worry, okay, maybe he's a little hurt or something, because the A's shouldn't be able to control Aaron Judge for a 4-game series. Maybe some of the starters get to him, but he should rake against the bullpen there, because they have very limited depth in terms of pitching. But Max Goodman, everybody, appreciate you joining once again. Follow Max on X, Max T. Goodman. And we'll have Max back on again in a few weeks once, you know, the Yankees complete another homestand, probably another road series. And then we'll get him back on and talk about what's going on. Appreciate it, Max.
Sounds like a plan. Derek, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, man.